Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Thursday, September 19th. I'm sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by my co-host, who's usually in the news chair, my co-host, Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Happy to be in the co-host chair. It's really comfortable.
Yes, it is. Much different than the other one, feet away.
It's just wonderful.
Well, and so sitting in your chair, the news chair, the news guy, if you will, Chris Woodward, news anchor for American Family News. Chris, good morning to you.
Good morning. Happy to be here in any chair.
Well, that's what we like to hear.
I'll pick up Tim's dry cleaning if it keeps that paycheck coming. So.
Well, that's the spirit we like from our employees.
Tomorrow I'm restriping the parking lot.
You're restriping the parking lot. That's the kind of enthusiasm we really like around here.
Well, last time I expressed enthusiasm, Tim was like, you need to bring it down a little bit. So we had to use our NPR voices.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember.
This is Marketplace.
Yes. Chris Woodward is covering the story. Yeah. All right, Chris, what stories are you covering? What's up?
One of the big things that everybody's talking about today, even the people that don't like him and don't air programs from Fox News, are talking about President Trump's exclusive interview with Fox News personality Ed Henry. They've already aired several excerpts of this today on Fox and Friends. And one of the things that President Trump talked about, he expressed confidence in battling whoever the Democratic Party's presidential nominee is next year. Clip one.
Are you getting ready for Elizabeth Warren or someone else who's rising in the polls and not facing Joe Biden?
Whoever it is, my attitude is whoever it is, Elizabeth Warren is doing better than Joe right now. Joe's having a hard time. We'll see what happens. Whoever it is, I'll take him on and we'll do well.
Now, it sounds like campaign rhetoric that Joe's having a hard time right now. But yesterday it came out. I don't know if you guys saw this, but yesterday evening, Biden's poll numbers were like the lowest they've been to this point. He's now got a very small lead against many of the people running against him for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. Elizabeth Warren has been surging. Bernie Sanders is kind of holding the line. Even Pete Buttigieg is polling higher than Kamala Harris now in the state of California. And that speaks volumes about a candidate that a few weeks ago was kind of considered to be maybe the second or third candidate in this race. But you saw something a minute ago about it's gotten the attention of people over across the pond.
Yeah, this is actually also a story from Fox News. Now, folks, obviously we do not promote gambling on this show or any show here. We are opposed to it. But this Fox News story says a UK gambling site has more bets for Hillary Clinton winning the Democratic nomination than anyone actually running. And the whole idea of this, we've kind of explained this. I've said early on that I thought the Democratic field might become so entangled together without a clear winner that you go to the convention, nobody can get enough votes. Mm-hmm. And what conventions will sometimes do, it hasn't happened in a long time, but they will draft an alternative candidate that everyone else who ran but can't get enough votes to get the nomination would applaud and agree to support. I've always thought that Michelle Obama might be waiting in the wings. Who knows? I just think she would be incredibly popular and would have a really good chance in beating Donald Trump. But mm-hmm. what this article is saying is that there are people across the pond who believe that Hillary Clinton is not going to bother running, but she will be waiting around if that scenario unfolds, Fred, and nobody can get enough votes to secure the nomination.
Well, the fact that, you know, programs like this are talking about it, and when I listen to the Democrat on the, you know, when Fox has their panels and I listen to the Democrat, they admit, for instance, that Joe Biden is a problem,
right,
with his gaffes. Everybody, you know, they kind of laugh at his gaffes, but when they become almost a daily thing,
they can take on a life of their own.
Well, they can, and you know, it begins if it's everybody makes mistakes. The president, right. President Trump, in the midst of those tragic shootings, misplaced a city name in Ohio,
right.
So those things happen.
President Obama on the campaign trail said there were 57 states in America. You know,
that happens.
That happens.
But if you're doing it on a regular basis, and so you have that problem, Biden's still out in front, as Chris has noted, but I think the percentage was like 29. He's down to 29% in the latest poll. But then you have the problem of the rest. And all the rest are, you know, the assessment that you have to make. They are radically left.
Right.
If you're talking Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren now has 2 and 3 behind Biden. And then we were talking in our story meeting in the newsroom this morning about Bernie Sanders now, what is it, free housing or something of that.
Housing is a human right.
Housing is a human right. And he's got something close to a $2 trillion plan for that. So you start doing the math on all of Bernie's free stuff, tuition, you know, Medicare for all, just keep on rolling there. Mm-hmm. We're talking trillions and trillions of dollars. And he thinks, you know, the 1% on top of the, you know, billionaires in the car are going to pay for all of this.
Yeah, that's the way all of them are funding all of their plans. Well, a tax on the rich, on the rich.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like if you manage to save $1,000 back for summer vacation and you start thinking, okay, now what can we do with that $1,000? All right, we're going to go to Disney World. We're going to go to Six Flags. We're going to go to the beach. We're going to go to the mountains, all based on the same $1,000. Well, you can't do all that stuff with it.
You can't, and your average American person looks at these plans and says, you know, free this, free this, free tuition, free Medicare, all of this stuff. They're smart enough to know it's not free.
Right.
Someone is going to pay for this. There aren't that many billionaires in the United States to handle all this. So it's not going to work. And that's why Elizabeth Warren is being questioned right now. What was it, Steve Colbert the other night? Questioning her about you're not being clear about taxes on the middle class.
Right.
And it's what's been estimated at $5,000.
Right.
That if you're
at least Bernie admitted, yes, we're going to raise taxes to pay for this.
So in the midst of an economy where people are just starting to make a little bit more money in their paycheck, thanks to what the president has done, and then you have these lefty Democrat candidates coming along saying, well, I'm going to take back some of that stuff.
Right.
Or I'm going to take more back than what you've earned over the last few years or increases. Your average American says, I don't want that. I'm real happy with the way I am. And the Democrats know this. They're worried about Biden's mental stability, his physical ability to be president as he approaches 80 years of age.
Right.
And then he says, they look at Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris and all the rest, and they say, well, they're whacked out. Politically, they are whacked out. We cannot afford to have this. And that's why the Democrats are saying, well, maybe a Hillary Clinton will come back, or maybe a Michelle Obama, maybe an Eric Holder. Who knows?
Right. Right. And I think it's exactly right. And now the question would be, can someone break away from the pack? Now, if Elizabeth Warren does break away from the pack, we haven't even gotten to the primary season. That starts in January.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we're still months away from the first primary. So somebody could break out from the pack and become the, you know, presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party. And if that's the case, you can't bring someone else in at the convention after people have duly voted in your primaries. I'm sure that would lead to a disaster, lawsuits and all kinds of things. But if no one can do that, if they just swap wins, you know, Elizabeth Warren wins Iowa, Biden wins New Hampshire, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, if that happens and nobody can garner enough of the primary votes, then you have the possibility of someone coming in at the convention.
The Iowa race or caucuses is interesting to me because every candidate for the party's nomination, Democratic Party's nomination, is for – they're all in favor of everybody eating less beef to save the earth, right? And then they're all in favor of wind energy, which Iowans love and support. They get like 35% of their electricity now from wind. So it's like I don't know I don't want to speak for Iowa listeners, but I don't know what is there to choose from. I mean, it's like everybody – over there is for the same thing.
Right.
That's an interesting race to watch. And certainly, as we've seen from 2008, 12 and 16, whoever wins Iowa is not necessarily the person that goes on to get the nomination. Mike Huckabee, I believe, won Iowa.
Pat Robertson, I think, way back in 1988.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
The host of on CBN.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 700 Club.
700 Club. Mm-hmm. He was in politics, and he won, I think, in Iowa, or came in second or something, a really good showing. So, so that's the problem. If everyone believes, Joe Biden had, I think, distanced himself from the rest of the field by being a little bit more moderate. Mm-hmm. I mentioned yesterday on the show, I was reading a couple articles and a couple of polls. One was a CNN poll. The other one was a Gallup poll showing that Democratic voters want the party coming back more towards the middle, more moderate, by like 54 to 41. It was a pretty good sized gap. But with Biden separating himself a little bit, now a lot of these Democratic voters are going, okay, I like that he's not radical, but do we really think he can beat Trump? And that's what they're going to have to decide. Anyway, I like the idea when you were explaining, Fred, having come back from vacation in Canada, about the system up there where just 6 weeks, that's it.
That's it.
That's how long you have to campaign. Man, I just thought, oh, that would be so amazing. But these campaigns start right after the last one.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And we haven't even hit primaries.
I've met a lot of people over the years. Many of them are longtime listeners to AFR, but they've said comments to me in just about every election that I've worked in since I've been here almost 10 years now. And a lot of people will say, I'll just be ready for when it's over.
Yeah.
You know? it dominates our thinking and our public lives.
All right.
So, all right, what else we got?
Speaking of our public lives and Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau he's found himself in a bit of controversy today because some pictures have surfaced, even video, of him wearing so-called blackface or brownface. One example that really caught fire in terms of grabbing headlines, Trudeau was in brownface for some kind of Arabian Nights event back in 2001 at a school that he taught at that time. He was 20-something years old.
29.
At the time. He has since apologized for it, but it's still causing a lot of people to be upset. We're going to do clip 9 here, Brent.
Dressed up in an Aladdin costume and put makeup on. I shouldn't have done that. When I was in high school, I dressed up at a talent show and sang Deo. With makeup on.
I didn't consider it a racist action at the time, but now we know better.
Now, this, of course, comes after we've had Democrats here in this country, the lieutenant governor of the state of Virginia, as well as the governor of the state of Virginia, being found in controversial situations. Well, not the lieutenant governor, but he had his own controversies, still battling those. The governor of Virginia, though, Mr. Northam, was found in pictures possibly wearing blackface, brownface, things like that. And Canada, for those that are not aware, and certainly Fred's the expert on this, Canada has a lot of immigrants. Many of them are people of color. And Trudeau has been facing an uphill battle of late going into a big election next month.
Yeah. As controversies go, the bigger controversy up there, and I think I talked about this yesterday, is the company in Montreal that was in hot water with its dealings with Libya. And Montreal is Trudeau's riding, his district, where he comes from.
Yeah.
And he basically forced his attorney general to resign because he wanted her to stop her investigation of that company. That's the bigger issue, because the RCMP may be investigating him in the midst of the election campaign for obstruction of justice. This one.
So RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Are they kind of like Canada's FBI kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, well, they're a national police force.
Okay.
But they
would do the
investigative responsibility.
Okay.
This is more of a bit of a tempest in a teapot type thing. This is political correctness.
Right.
This is not something that's legal, illegal question. It's about. He was 29 years old. They were having an Arabian Nights at the school where he was teaching. So he dressed up, in a costume. There's pictures out there of him. And he put, I guess, brown polish on his face or whatever the case may be.
Face paint or something.
And the blackface issue goes back, as you just heard, He was singing Deo at a he was a high school student
right
at that time. So I don't think this is going to stick around much. I don't think.
Do you think this will provide cover for the more serious question?
No.
So won't people focusing on the brown face slash black face?
Nah, this will be gone in a week.
Okay.
The SNC-Lavalin, which is the name of the company in Montreal, this is going to hang on for a while.
Okay.
Because you are talking about the prime minister of the country firing his attorney general in order, he says, Trudeau says, to save jobs in Montreal. But, I mean, you cannot fire your attorney general who is going to investigate a company. You can be found guilty of obstruction of justice.
Right.
So that one is going to hang on throughout the campaign. But this will go away. Like Chris was mentioning, the governor of Virginia, that story has gone away.
Yeah.
It was brought up today in some of the stories just to bring the American connection to this story. But for the most part, that's off the front pages weeks ago.
Yeah. I understand. I think I understand why black people in 2019 would say, listen, you don't understand how performances in blackface were used to mock black people.
Yes.
And it is insulting. Okay. I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back 20 years or 25 years before people became a little more attuned mm-hmm. to the feelings of different races and different groups, I don't think there should be a penalty. I don't think you should be cost an election for something you did when you were in high school. Especially if you come forward like Justin Trudeau has done and said, listen, I'm sorry, that was insensitive. I have changed my mind. We know better. Mm-hmm. I apologize. I think that kind of thing should be done, should be done over and done with.
Yep.
When you're talking about 20 or 30 years. The guy was 29. Justin Trudeau was 29 years old when he did this?
As a teacher at the high school.
As a teacher. How old is he now? Is he 40? He's young.
He's mid to late 40s, I
think. Okay. Yeah,
that was 18 years ago.
All right.
He'd be 47-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, I agree. I think this goes away mm-hmm. for him. Now, it was top of the fold on Drudge, and now has slipped down with other things coming, more important. All right, what else we got, Chris?
Well, we heard this soundbite at the top of the hour in one of the newscasts. But in recent days, there was an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal from a doctor named Stanley Goldfarb. He wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, and the headline is this: "Take 2 aspirin and call me by my pronouns." Dr. Goldfarb says that woke medical schools curricula are increasingly focused on social justice rather than treating illness. Goldfarb gave an example saying, back when I was associate dean of curriculum at the University of Pennsylvania's medical school, I was chastised by a faculty member for not including a program on climate change in the course of study. And that brings us to some sound here. Speaking on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, the new CEO of Christian Medical Association, Dr. Mike Chupp, agreed with the op-ed saying, yeah, these things are happening. Clip 7.
We've actually had some medical students from across the country who have come across our Freedom to Care website, freedomtocare.org, that our Vice President for Government Relations, Jonathan Embody, set up several years ago during the Obama administration. And so a number of med students have written in and saying, I feel like I'm an incredible minority in my medical school. And one from New Mexico in particular just said, I'm sitting through these classes and it clearly violates my Christian worldview and biblical beliefs, but we're not allowed to speak up. I'm ostracized if I ask even basic questions about transgender ideology, a number of things related to LGBT issues. And when we provided some of our materials to this particular medical student, she said, I'm so relieved to know that there are others in this country.
Now, some people listening might say, well, you need to leave your faith at the door when you enter the hospital and things of that sort. But we've interviewed and we've aired their sound bites many times on this network, Beta News, or on our talk shows. A lot of medical professionals, Christian medical professionals, legal experts say that is not true. And we actually have an Office of Civil Rights at the Department of Health and Human Services headed by a guy named Roger Severino, Carrie Severino's husband, in fact. And they're investigating these kinds of things. There are people that are being held, they're ostracized. they're being made fun of. They're being held back. We had that nurse in I forget what state it is in recent weeks. That was a big story a couple of weeks ago, if it's been that long. A nurse that was forced to perform an abortion, even though she had voiced her objection to assisting abortions with the hospital. They were in a situation where there was nobody else but her, at least in the doctor's opinion. She was basically told, you got to do it or you got to take a hike. These kinds of things are concerning because these people in medical schools today could be in the doctor's office for you tomorrow.
Well, you know, Fred, this is the question that a lot of Christians have to ask themselves when they go to. Now, this used to be, and probably still is, but used to be the complaint. I know college students, my own kids, going to colleges down here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, mm-hmm. saying, we were told, you know, you not to bring up your faith, and this is what I teach. You don't like it, go to another class. And now it's in medical schools, graduate schools, law schools. It's shot throughout the education, higher education system. But the question that these students have to ask themselves, is it worth the fight? Because if this person stands up and says in the class, I think this is a bunch of baloney, all this transgender stuff, and or climate change, what does that have to do with what we're learning? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be a doctor. Then they can get kicked out of classes. Now you got to go to court. And now you got to fight that battle. So there's a lot of students who, you know, they talk about chilled speech. They just say, well, I guess I just shut up and just, you know, grin and bear it. Mm-hmm. And but these are becoming re-education camps, Fred.
It's propaganda. And it's starting in elementary schools these days. It's kind of propaganda for the left. And it doesn't surprise me at all. It's continuing on, whether it's, you know, medical schools or law schools. But you know, my question would be, what is the debate over the policy on climate change? Why does that become important in a medical school?
Well, it has nothing to do with it. They just see themselves as being an important conduit for these woke ideas.
Yeah.
They're on a mission, and it's got nothing to do with teaching medicine.
You know, I suppose one response if I'm a Christian in a medical school would be, okay, when I get that question on the examination, here's what was said in the classroom.
Right.
Quote somebody, and you can leave it at that. The problem becomes, and Chris alluded to this, is that during your transition period in a medical school, just before you get your degree, and then when you go on to work in these fields, if you are forced into a situation where you're told you must participate in an abortion, that's, to my mind, is when it gets really serious.
Yeah.
Where you become a Baronelle Stutzman.
Right.
Where you've got to decide, no, I'm not going to do this. Well, we're going to fire you if you don't. Well, go ahead and fire me.
Yeah.
I'm going to stand on what I believe.
Right.
And then you can take them to court and see where the case goes there. But you're going to face this. It doesn't matter whether it's medicine or law or retail.
Or education,
yep. Whatever the case may be, we are living at a time in this country where Christian beliefs are being challenged everywhere. Journalism.
Right.
I don't think I'd want to work in the newsroom of the New York Times right now.
That's right.
Or the Washington Post, or God forbid, CNN.
Right.
You know, because I probably wouldn't last long in that environment. Because how dare you express an opinion that's opposite of the politically correct one.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way it is today. We are in spiritual warfare in this country.
Yep. And this kind of propaganda has gone on in totalitarian regimes. Just how totalitarian are we becoming
yes.
in some of these institutions? All right. When we come back, Jan Markell, founder of Olive Tree Ministries, will be on with us. We'll talk about some of the news today. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
I think I've got a stumper for you this week.
Trivia Friday. You know you laugh, and you know you always learn something.
What vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when taking an oath?
Yeah, it's funny now.
but put yourself in my place.
That funny, Jim?
It is.
But listen to the question.
Trivia Friday. You'll want to tune in. 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You've been hearing about our Holy Land tour coming up in March, March 12th through the 20th. Well, it's filling up. In fact, I expect us to be full in the next few weeks. So if you're interested in going with us, if this is your bucket list trip and maybe this is the year you'd like to go, just go to the website twholyland.com. twholyland.com. You know, the great thing about our trip to the Holy Land is experiencing it with brothers and sisters from across the country, many of whom listen to American Family Radio and support American Family Association. So you're going to be with folks of like mind and like spirit. We're going to have a wonderful time visiting Israel. So for more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. When faith and football mix, that story next. Todd Starnes here. You know, America is facing dangers of socialism and secularism every day, and we need young people who stand for freedom. At Liberty University, they're training the next generation of faith-based conservative leaders who will be on the front lines of this culture war. Professors teach their students about free enterprise, individual freedom, and the Constitution from a Judeo-Christian perspective. So join Liberty University in training the conservative leaders of tomorrow. Text GIVE to 839-858 today. Chicago Bears kicker Eddie Pinheiro Jr. is having a pretty good start to the season. He made a last-second 53-yard field goal to beat the Denver Broncos. But Pinheiro is catching some backlash over what he said during a television interview after the game.
Eddie, all offseason long, the story in Chicago was the inability to find a clutch kicker. Yeah. Today, the story and the answer is you.
Yeah, that was, like I said, I couldn't have done it without my team. Thank God that it was to this point. And for everybody listening, man, if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, you better start because he's real. I promise you that.
Well, the Chicago Tribune published a column titled The Off-Putting Theology of Bears Kicker Eddie Pinheiro. You know, it's interesting. When a professional football player celebrates his Christian faith, he gets destroyed by the mainstream media. But when a player takes a knee to protest the national anthem, well, the mainstream media celebrates. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back to today's issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now, Chris Woodward, news anchor for American Family News, and then one of our special guests, Glenn Oates, founder of Faith, Grace, Hope, Restoration, and Foundation Ministries. And just full disclosure, Glenn goes to my church.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Good morning.
At Hope Church in Tupelo. Well, listen, Glenn, you and I were having a conversation a couple of weeks ago. We met for lunch, and we were just talking about your ministry and the ministry's goal, mission, if you will, is inspiring people to promote God in the workplace.
Absolutely.
And I thought, man, you know, we hear a lot about corporations, and I want you to kind of explain a little bit about what you have done in corporations, you know, in the past. But a lot of people look at corporations as being completely antagonistic to Christian values. You believe there is a place and a need for Christian men and women who work in corporate America to stand for their faith and meet together and fellowship together and have Bible studies and so forth,
that,
right?
That's absolutely right, Ed. And you actually hit it right on the head there, is that, you know, FGH is in place to promote God in the workplace and to encourage and equip and partner with Christians within the workplace and Christian leaders. Just a short little testimony of how this whole thing came about is I've been in corporate America probably 20-plus years in some fashion, and the last 15 of those has been with the global 500 company. So it's a fairly large company. And when we came together almost 15 years ago, the like-minded people during that time or in that era was that we wanted to have a Bible study, and there was just a small group of us that wanted to study God's word during off time, of course, right? But we wanted to study God's word and continue our faith and grow within the Lord. One of the things that we noticed, though, is as we continued to do this, is that there were other pockets of Bible studies within this large corporation at this location. And so we started meeting with these other Bible groups, and we wanted to develop a corporate worship, if it were, where we could all come together at one time and worship our God and worship God as He asks us to do throughout the day. Now, there wasn't anything in place at that time to do that.
Right.
So what we approached the diversity group at that time and asked them, how can we go about doing this? Is there a process in place? There was a loose process at that time of how we could do that. And so we went through the motions. We submitted the paperwork, things of like, what is your plan? What do you plan to do throughout this year? What is your budget? What is your bylaws? Is there any structure that you have in place? Of course, we didn't have anything at that time, and they helped us develop these things as we went on. Through some time, we actually developed those bylaws and the documents that needed to be done, and they were approved. That was a huge, huge milestone within this location, is that we could then come as a corporate body and worship our Lord during off times. I say off times, that means off the clock. You know, I'm not being paid by the company
right
at that time.
Like lunchtime or something like
lunchtime,
that?
Lunchtime, yeah, 45 minutes before work, after work.
So people would, they wanted to do this.
They absolutely wanted to do this. Again, we found the small groups, and there was, after this got developed, it really took off. People started hearing about it. Of course, you know, there was some stuff we had to go through to actually post it throughout the corporation and promote it and say, you know, that this is our time of worship. Please come with us and do this, right? It actually grew more intensely than what we thought it would, and it was really unique.
How big did it get? I mean,
at that time when we started, there was maybe 20 or 30 right. people meeting at, you know, every other week is the corporate time is when we decided every other week where we would all come together, whether we'd have a guest speaker is part of our plans, right? Whether we'd have a guest speaker, we'd have a devotional for that week, or we'd have some other activity where Christians could come together within the workplace. It grew to hundreds, and after about 9 years, we decided to start a second one at a second location. Hmm. That one was a little more difficult.
You had resistance from the corporation? Or?
There was some resistance from the corporation. However, the diversity group and the HR group kind of led us in a direction of you know, kind of make it go this way or make it go that way. And after some time, it was actually implemented and put in place. That one also, Ed, continuously grows, and it's still growing today.
Yeah, and I think the key point here is, if I understand, is you're doing this during break periods or before work or after work, so it's not infringing in any way. You know, I've noted that there's a growing number of Muslims in various workplaces around the country, and quite often corporations will go beyond what you're asking them to do. They'll give them Friday off because that is their day of worship.
Right.
And so accommodations are made for other religions. So it's an opportune time, I would think, for Christians to approach management and say, you know, as part of the inclusiveness policy of this corporation, wouldn't it be fair for us to have a room to meet? So is that part of the bylaws that they would provide a lunch room or a conference room, maybe?
Absolutely. We can do these things, mm-hmm. and there is some backing by that, where as long as it does not bring a hindrance to the employer.
Yes.
Right? We can do this kind of activity. We can come together and worship our God during off-clock hours.
Right? I mean, you're there for 10 hours. I mean, that's a pretty big chunk of time, and I think there's nothing wrong. It's certainly understandable that Christians would say, you know, during that time, we want to get together, and we just want to have a little Bible study or prayer, and that seems to make sense.
Yeah. More than 66% of our time during the week is spent at work.
Yeah.
Right? That's huge numbers.
Have you had any success stories like professions of faith made or people saying, you know what, I started studying my Bible more at home because of what we're doing here, things like that?
Absolutely, yes. And that's part of the activity is to promote God in the workplace, right? Go and make other disciples. And it's there are huge success stories. I don't have any noted here.
But right, yeah. But you want not only for Christians to be strengthened and edified, but then to become a little more bold about sharing their faith. If people are standing around the water cooler, I don't know if there's even a water cooler anymore. That's just what we used to call it. Everyone's talking about football. There's nothing wrong with talking about Jesus. And in terms of legalities, you're allowed to spot. If you can talk about the latest Marvel movie, you can talk about your faith.
You can. Absolutely, yeah. You can. And do you know, in 2018, in the last census, there was 327 million Americans. And the George Barna Research Group indicates that 30% of that population are born-again Christians.
Wow, 30%.
30%. And what does that mean? That would mean that we have 98 million Americans born-again in America. We roughly have 150 million adult workers in America right now. If 30% of those were Christians, that means we have 45 million Christians in the workforce. And if we spend upwards of 66% of our time in the workplace—
Okay.
Those are huge numbers.
Right, so before we let you go, tell our listeners about your ministry, what it exists to help them do, what the website is, and how would you encourage people in the workforce?
Right. And really, how do you start? One of the very first thing is you need to pray. Mm-hmm. How do you start a Bible-based work within your workplaces? You need to pray. And the second is reach out to your diversity group. Find out if there's a process within corporate America. Is there a process within your corporation to start a faith-based entity within your work? If not, contact our website. It's FGHMinistries, that's with an S, .com. And we'll gladly work through this process with you. There's many resources on that page, and it's continually being developed. I've actually reached out to a couple of others ministries kind of doing the same thing and asked for their permission to allow put their resources on our website,
yeah,
to help promote that.
Okay.
Right. And really just kind of going forward, the next thing that you need to do is in corporate America is you need to have some bylaws, you need to have some structure in how to promote this and how to keep it going within corporate America. Right. And you also need a partner with the diversity groups and the HR groups. If anything, if you show them Christ-like faith and they're not Christians.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity, to show Christ rather
That's
than
right.
immediately becoming antagonistic or.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. Matt, that sounds great. I wanted to have you on because I really enjoyed our conversation and I just wanted other people to catch the vision. If they're in a big corporation, it doesn't have to be a spiritual wilderness. There may be other Christians there who would benefit from.
Yes.
From a ministry like yours. Again, Faith, Grace, Hope, Restoration and Foundation Ministries. The website is FGHMinistries, that's with an S, .com. Glenn, sure. Thank you so much for being on with us. Appreciate
God bless you.
It.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think that's I think the time has come for Christians. We're talking about, you know, nurses in hospitals and mm-hmm. students in medical schools and all those kind of things mm-hmm. that are really up against it. Mm-hmm. We've got to take the opportunities we have and the opportunities that God gives us mm-hmm. to make a space for the faith and for the gospel to be preached and for Christians to be able to be bold about their faith. And this is a great play. The workplace, specifically corporate America, presents a great opportunity for that.
Right.
Well, it's just a great time, I think, for mutual encouragement within the workplace. But also, I think it's a blessing from the Lord that you do have corporations now that are willing to do this.
Right.
and to provide a space somewhere on their campus where folks can meet, again, on their off times, break times, whatever the case may be. So what a great ministry this is, offering tools. If you're listening right now, you work for a company and you want to start one of these, go to that website and get some information and pray. As our guest said, number one, pray about it.
Pray about it. That's right.
You know, and God will open the doors and open hearts for that to happen.
And that website is FGH Ministries, that's with an S, .com.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that with all the identity politics that have kind of taken over corporate America, they've actually set in motion the mechanics by which a ministry like this can get started.
That's right.
Because, after all, it would be illegal to say, well, you can start a group about anything you want, just not Christian. That would be illegal. So once they open the door for everyone else to start a group, they have to, in a sense. Now, what our guest was Glenn Oates. What Glenn was saying is be Christ-like as you approach corporate America and whatever group, the diversity group or human resources, whoever's in charge of that. Be Christ-like. You don't have to go right for the juggler, you know, and but it's a great opportunity.
Absolutely.
So. All right. I promised before the break that we would have Jan Markell on, and she is going to be our guest for the remainder of this segment. Jan, very popular guest on this show and one of our most popular shows on American Family Radio. She's founder of Olive Tree Ministries. She is host of the radio program Understanding the Times, heard on weekends on AFR, Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. Central Time, Sunday from 12 to 1 p.m. Central Time. Jan, welcome back to Today's Issues.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jan, you have, before we get to maybe a couple of stories that we wanted to get your take on, don't you have a conference coming up?
On Saturday here in Minneapolis, and folks can, we still have tickets if they want to go to olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org. But most folks at this point, we invite them to live stream at no cost. Just access our website Saturday morning, Central Time, 8:45 a.m. We've got Dr. Robert Jeffress. We've got Amir Sarfati from Israel, Pastor J.D. Farag, Pastor Jack Hibbs, yours truly, Lori Cardoza-Moore. Lori's interviewed by One News Now all the time. So those would be six speakers going on that day, live stream, free of charge. Hope folks will tune in.
Okay, and give the website one more time.
Go to my website, which is olivetreeviews.org, and you'll just be instructed right on the home page. Click here, and then it will be posted to YouTube. It should be on YouTube within, I would hope, hours to maybe a day, so folks who can't, who are busy Saturday can access it. And then we'll have CDs and DVDs in a month. I just think we're trying, well, this particular event Saturday, there's so much going on in the world, gentlemen. We're trying to help folks understand the times and contend for the faith and try to figure out what on earth is going on in our crazy world. So we'll do that all day Saturday.
And I'll tell you, I'll just give testimony. I was able to attend the conference last year, and Lord willing, we'll be there this Saturday. It is a fantastic conference.
Thank you, Fred.
These speakers that Jan has lined up, including Jan herself, you're going to want to be there. Dr. Jeffress. Is going to be, Lori Cardoza-Moore is going to be there. One of the things she's going to be talking about is the, and we talked about this yesterday on the program, the growing anti-Semitism on campuses, not only, you know, starting in public schools, but universities also.
Right.
And that is being tracked. And so you're going to be want to be there. If you can't be there, folks, as Jan is saying, live stream this, you're going to be treated to some great speakers on important topics of our day.
All right, Chris, what stories can we pitch to
Jan?
Well,
I wanted to get Jan's take on what's been going on in Israel with the recent elections that have occurred there. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and people from some other parties. Are you concerned about you know, the things that we've seen thus far with Netanyahu not, I guess, being the clear front runner at this point?
Well, Well, let me try to make a complicated story a little bit less complicated and also keep it brief in the interest of time. In Israel, you do vote for a party, and Benjamin Netanyahu's party is trailing right now, barely trailing, but it is trailing. Benny Gantz of the Blue and White Party seems to have a slight lead now, and actually the final could take a few weeks before it's all worked out, all the details. keep in mind, this confusion and this delay in Israel securing a functioning government is coming at a time when a Mideast war is brewing. I mean, for Pete's sake, Saudi Arabia was attacked by Iran this week, and her oil fields set on fire, as we all know, half of them destroyed. And there's just literally talk of a Mideast war right at a time when Israel does not have a very solid government. So how does all this play out? I don't think anybody knows. As I said, it could take several weeks. And I kind of compare this a little bit, gentlemen, to after World War II, England did this to Churchill. I mean, Churchill allowed England to be victorious in World War II, as well as America participating. And then England sort of unelected him the next time, and it made no sense. And Benjamin Netanyahu has been absolutely a hero in Israel when it comes to fighting back against Iran, as far as sending the Mossad in to collect Iranian information on how far is their nuclear program. They've even gotten into warehouses where they find uranium. So the Iranians say, well, this is a carpet cleaning factory. No, you're making nukes in there. And Benjamin Netanyahu is behind all this, and he very well could lose this election. That's kind of a short version of what just happened.
Jan, it's Fred here. Now, Benny Gantz, of the head of the Blue and White Party, and I'm making a broad comparison here. If you equate that to American politics, they would be the Democrats.
Yes, correct.
So, Benny Gantz said this morning that he's not interested in a coalition unity government if Netanyahu stays as head of the Likud Party.
Correct.
So he wants Netanyahu out of politics.
Exactly.
That's where we are.
And again, this is a tragedy. From the perspective of Bible-believing Christians, from the perspective of, let's just say, conservatives, both in America and in Israel, to lose Bibi Netanyahu, I believe, I'm not going to say it's a crisis, but it's going to complicate the Mideast scenario, because Benny Gantz, again, he's much more left-leaning. How is he going to protect Israel right at the time when Iran is gaining steam to do some dastardly things in the Middle East, as they just have with Saudi Arabia, and we're going to lose Bibi Netanyahu? It's horrible timing, just horrible.
Well, and Benny Gantz, I would say, would take a very different stance on the Jewish settlements in the West Bank. I just see an incredible change in the relationship between the White House and Israel, and which has been a tremendous relationship since the election of Trump. This is very serious, Jan.
Well, it's made all the more serious in light of the fact that Iran is sort of testing the waters to see how far can she go in the Middle East to cause death and destruction. And when does she decide, well, I think maybe it's time we try to do the same type of maneuvering in Israel, obviously our number one ally in the world, certainly our number one ally in the Middle East and possibly the world. Of course, Donald Trump would still step in and do what he could. But yeah, you made a good point. And the point I think you're making, and that I would want to second, is that never has there been such a strong relationship between the two countries, because the two primary leaders, Netanyahu and President Trump, are allies, good friends, you know, confidants, looking out for each other and have each other's interest in mind. That is not going to be the case with Benny Gantz if, in fact, his Blue and White Party and he gets into power. Again, I don't think we're going to know for perhaps a week or two, but it does not look good.
Hey, it's Chris here. I don't know a lot about this person that President Trump has named as his new national security advisor, other than what I've read on Fox News or CNN, things like that. Do you know where this advisor is on the nation of Israel? I know Bolton was viewed by many as being, you know, pro-Israel, staunch Israel, things like that.
Well, I do not know where he stands, but here's what I do know. The pro-Israel community, self-included, is quite devastated at the loss of John Bolton. And to just say, well, he was out because he was too much of a hawk, that's probably ridiculous. Israel was leaning on John Bolton as a pro-Israel wise advisor to Donald Trump as far as all things security, national security. He wasn't national security director, but he was an advisor. And he was the voice of reason. And granted, he was a hawk. There's no question he was a hawk. And apparently the president and some of his other close advisors are tired of war in the Middle East. Well, again, we've got war drums going on as we speak. Saudi Arabia was attacked. So it's now is not the time for these kinds of changes, be it Bolton, be it the removal of Bibi Netanyahu. Now is not the time for this to be happening because we've got big trouble on the horizon in the Middle East.
Jen, just a last question, and we'll let you go. Read a lot of things about when Iran shot down that American drone when it was outside of their airspace, the recent attack on the oil facility in Saudi Arabia. And what a lot of people are saying is that Iran is testing the waters to see how far they can go before there are military consequences from the United States. Do you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely, I think we could wake up one of these mornings, and of course, Bibi Netanyahu is still the prime minister of Israel, even though everything's kind of hanging in the balance. But we could wake up tomorrow, and Netanyahu has decided that he's going to do something preemptive and go out and take out some nuclear reactors or strike some sensitive positions in Iran, and I do believe he would have President Trump's blessing. We don't know that. I'm not on the advisory committee or any stretch like that, but I just think that if Israel's going to do this, if she's going to try to protect herself by doing something preemptively, it needs to be under the administration of Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump. Now, that window of opportunity may have just shrunk to a few weeks.
Okay. All right, Jan, thank you so much. Give our listeners the website again for if they want to go and view live or view later on the conference you've got.
You can watch it live at olivetreeviews.org. You will be redirected. It's very simple. And if you can't do that on Saturday, we'll have it up on YouTube, I would hope within 24 hours. So you can just look up Understanding the Times 2019, and you can watch it at your comfort and leisure.
Okay. Jan, thank you so much for being on with us again today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Jan Markell, founder of Olive Tree Ministries, host of the radio program Understanding the Times, heard on weekends on American Family Radio, Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. Central Time, and Sunday from 12 to 1 p.m. Central Time. All right, folks, we're going to take a five-minute break for news. When we come back, Steve Jordahl will join us. We'll find out what else is happening, both here and abroad. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Five-minute break, and we will return. Please join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.